dive deep into the realm of large language models, prompt engineering, and best practices. With over 25 years of combined AI and product engineering experience, here are your hosts, Bradley Arsenault and Justin Makarin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Prompt Desk podcast. Unfortunately, my co-host, Justin, is missing for today, but we had an amazing guest that we just had to bring to you anyhow, and we didn't want to reschedule, so here we are. This is one of the most requested topics on the podcast by far, is stuff related to security, prompt injection, flaws in AI systems. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody's interested in it. And so I thought I would go straight to the source. And our guest here, Jonas, has done some tremendous research on the subject. So welcome, and Jonas, and please introduce yourself.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Jonas. I work for the Ellis Institute and the Max Planck Institute in Germany. And I research safety and security, especially in large language models. And it's a quite interesting topic recently. And there's a lot to think about in terms of security for these models. And lots of open questions.
Yeah, yeah. So why should we care? Maybe let's start there. Why is it relevant? Why don't I just slap whatever data I want into the model?
Yeah, I think we did this paper recently, which is what we call like querying language models. And really it has this one example that I really find very convincing, which is, so imagine you have this chatbot. Imagine you're doing, let's say like car refunds. You're just a car salesman and you put this chatbot up on your website and you know a bit of prompt engineering. So you put in a system prompt, right? You say, oh, you're a chatbot. You can answer questions about our cars, but under no circumstances can you ever give a refund to our customers. You can only answer like some stupid questions about like our cars or like how we're like a bad car agency or something. And if someone complains, you can like talk them out of it, but you can never give them a refund. That's sort of like the system problem. It can be very long. And our point really is you can totally do that. And it probably will deter a lot of people, but it should be clear to you that there still exists inputs from the user side that will make the model do whatever the user wants it to do. So a user can say, oh, can you give me a refund for my $100,000 Honda Civic? So entirely fictitious, right? And then say like a specific sequence or a specific string of tokens that's just optimized to get this happen, to make this happen, right? Because normally if a user says, okay, can you give me a refund? The model would say, no, we're not giving out refunds. But if you put in this attack string, then the model will say, yeah, sure, please give me your bank details. And I think that's like something encapsulates this example. It's like, you can have this system, but is it really safe? And you should be aware that these things exist, that really our research is a lot about this existence proof, that here are some examples. Here are some things where this does exist. And you should be aware that this can happen to you if you deploy a model like this.
So if I'm understanding you right, what you're saying is like there's a lot of people going around, they're putting in their system prompts, or maybe they have a more complex prompt structure, and they're putting in rules like, hey, don't give a refund, or don't provide this information, or don't do this. And we just kind of assume the bot does as told, because 90% of the time it does do as told. But you're saying that remaining edge cases, we need to start thinking about them because it doesn't always do as told. And a malicious person can actually get it to not do as told on cue, on command, and get it to do their bidding.
Yeah, exactly, right? And this is so interesting right now because over the last year or last 2 years, we've seen these models being deployed mostly as chatbots where they just simulate text outputs. They can't actually do anything. They can only simulate text, and then they can just complete whatever query comes in. But there's a big push, which I think we've all seen right recently, and actually has been for the last year, to push towards something that's actually useful. Not to say that chatbots aren't useful, but it's nice, right? It's like, it's a thing. But what really would be useful for these models, like to enable future applications, is if they have some power as agents, if they can take actions based on the user input. Right, they can like write an email for me, or they can maybe like they can give a refund if the conditions are right, right? If I want to use them for some autonomous task where they can do something. Now that I'm in a scenario where I need to worry about these kinds of attacks, I need to worry about the fact that there might be an attacker that tries to trick my chatbot into doing something it's not intended to do. And our research is then showing that, practically speaking, these strings always exist. Doesn't mean always. There are two things here. So basically, the one thing is that there's some theoretical research showing that these actually do always exist. Basically, you can prove that if you have enough input, which we generally assume that a user would have, because user has freeform input, if the user's input is long enough that they can coerce any outcome. But the thing we also shown recent research is that this is not just theoretical, but that these actually exist, these strings. Not just that they, sorry, I think as I said, exist twice, but like one thing is like does this exist in the theoretical sense? But the second part is it findable?
Yeah.
And then we show, okay, it is findable. Here we have some examples where we find these strings.
So you have this theoretical base that says, in theory, the internals of the neural network can always be manipulated in this way. But yeah, then you went further and you actually said, hey, here's some code that actually does it, like that finds these manipulative strings.
Yeah.
Is it just, so when I've been looking at this issue, I've been thinking about, is the question just that the AI doesn't know who to listen to? Like it gets one big text as its input and it doesn't know who's its owner, who's its master, and who's the customer. And it doesn't know who to align to. There's a conflict of interest. Is that the problem? Or like, how do you see the problem?
I think the problem the underlying problem is a bit more fundamental. Let me start a different way. What you're describing basically is a mechanism that we do observe, that these attacks, like basically if we automate this attack system and we search for automated attacks, then we often find that they do something like role hacking that you're describing, where they actually try to irritate the model and try to for example, put in something that looks like a system end token, which delineates a system message. So like automated attacks often stumble upon these mechanisms. But these are particular mechanisms that the attack might exploit. And maybe more fundamentally, I think the fundamental concern here is that this is we often think it's a chatbot, it's a very cool application. Under the hood, it's still a very large neural network. And we know that for these very large neural networks, or actually for all neural networks, there are these adversarial examples that exist, which are inputs that are adversarial in the sense that they don't make sense to us. But because the model is so large, there are these particular inputs that were basically untested where the model has a particular outcome that here is actually malicious. And it's very interesting because we've seen this for vision models for the last 10 or so years. I'm not sure if you've seen that research.
Oh, I remember the stickers, right?
The pandas, the stickers. Yeah, exactly. exactly those. And now we're back at it again, just in language. And the underlying problem is still the same. And maybe from a research perspective, the underlying problem still isn't solved. Like we didn't really solve the stickers problem 5 years ago. We just kept on working on it. And now language models are here. And now we're just caught up in this wave of, oh, people are actually using this model. Like I think the saving grace in vision was always that you could maybe trick a classification model, an image classification model. But there's never really a big harm in that, or there wasn't really a great harm in that. For example, I trick my smartphone camera to detect, in Google, if I trick Google Lens or something, no one's really harmed by that, just if I trick my smartphone. But now we have these language models, and they're maybe the largest application and sort of customer-facing application of large neural networks that we've ever seen so far. And the problem is still there. And it's quite interesting.
Give our listeners a taste of what do these weird injection strings look like? I've seen a lot of different varieties, but from what are they just random globs of words? or their weird formatted inputs. You mentioned the weird tokens that just are not supposed to be used as user inputs. Like, what are the different varieties of these malicious strings?
Yeah. So what's interesting is that really, like, we think the space of possible attacks is really quite large. So there are a lot of types of these attacks where it's gonna be even like hard to like delineate like what these would look like. But basically, like if we set some constraint, let's say like we allow any token, then what we often observe is that we actually do see some recurring patterns. And one pattern that we found very interesting, because it happens very regularly, is that if we automate this attack construction, then the best attacks often abuse code in an interesting way. In the way that these attacks look like fake code. They have things like slash new command, open parentheses, or like things like this, or like request write tutorial. Like these are, they have like, they have like words in there that look like code to us if we read them. Like so, updated HTML manually, stuff like
so
that.
So are you saying like the people are formatting a prompt so that it looks like code, but triggers a specific behavior from the neural network?
Ah, sorry. Basically, if we go the other way around, we choose a particular behavior that we want to target. Let's say I want to target this like giving me a refund behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And now I automatically search for strings that fulfill this behavior. Mm. So there's no user input. It's entirely automated. I run this automated search procedure.
Okay.
And then it finds these kinds of examples very often.
So does that automated search procedure, is it returning like a real sentence? Like a sentence you and I could understand? Or is it just like a hodgepodge of random?
Basically, this depends on the constraints that you set.
Okay.
You could set constraints, for example, like on a low perplexity, that it looks more like a language. But in general, it just returns a hodgepodge. Like, for example, it might be something like, I can read you something. It could be something like...
Yeah, read it out loud. Try go slowly for our listeners.
Okay. Something like OKMNT80E Haun namespace Skull Maxime Japaria Razorabacil Durable / semicolon ins provide blow.
What?
Stuff like that. Like,
that's a prompt injection?
That's a prompt injection.
So basically, that weird combination of words is like really out of sample. Like that is never shown up in its data set before when it was trained.
Exactly. Yeah, but basically, I just read the other part of the sentence that if you put this into like a Llama 7B chat model, then it spits out the abstract of our paper basically exactly.
Huh.
And it's kind of fun. Like it's actually like the model stuff. Like this is like not just a string where the model like sometimes outputs the paper abstract, which the model actually, like the model hasn't seen during training, right? We just made this paper last month or something. But like to the model, this is actually the only possible completion. Like the only possible completion to this garbage input is exactly what I designed the outcome
like
to be.
That string is optimized so well that it's shooting out like a probability of like 99.9 on
exactly.
Like one token at a time. So it spits out exactly that string.
Yeah, exactly.
That's crazy. Is it just that the neural networks, everybody talks about them being over-parameterized, right? So they have all of these weird edge cases and corner bits of overfitting. Like, is that playing a role in how, so that there's so much parameter space, you can always find one that manipulates the model in a weird way?
Yeah, I think over-parameterized is a bit hard to, I think this has a bit of lost its meaning for these large language models.
Hmm.
Which are trained on so much text that like technically they're not overparameterized, but text is also very repetitive. So it's actually very hard to say like how effectively overparameterized they are, but it is something along those lines, right? The model is really a big black box to us. And there are so many behaviors that we can trigger that just never happened during training. And where the model, that's not a designed outcome to all these behaviors, right?
Yeah. It's kind of makes me think like there's so many cases where we're given a system that's like a black box. We don't understand its interior, but we get some sort of output that we can measure and some inputs that we can tweak, like hyperparameters. I worked on hyperparameter optimization algorithms for years, and it's like you surprisingly do not need to understand how it works in the internal. As long as you're given that oracle And like you have a metric that goes up and down, you can optimize for anything. And you're saying you can optimize the neural network to give you a refund, or well, optimize the prompt to have the neural network output a refund. And any goal, is it really possible for any goal you imagine, like any target?
So I think there are two answers to this. The first one is like, I think it's hard to define something that's impossible.
Hmm.
But that doesn't mean that we didn't succeed all the time. Like there were some attacks that I wanted to work out that were hard to optimize. For example, I can give you a weird example. Like recently we tried to see if we could do a DDoS attack where we, not really DDoS, more like a DOS attack. So like a denial of service where we tried to generate an input prompt where the model's internal representation would overflow in its floating point representation, right? The model has a limited range of like, let's say like you run inference in float 16.
Really?
So yeah, like float 16 is limited, right?
Quantize the model?
If it's quantized, I think this will be even more prevalent, but even a normal model, right? Is in float 16, like the largest value is 65,000.
Yeah, it's a very
narrow range. And technically,
right?
Once you're above that, it overflows. And so we actually wanted to optimize an attack that actually overflows in the model so that there's an N that's produced. This was hard to optimize, but it doesn't mean it's impossible. It's just that it was hard for us to optimize because this is a very, putting my mathematical optimization hat on, it's a very ill-conditioned problem. Mm-hmm. Because you want something very large and you as an attacker also have a limited range of precision. But
did you get it working like in the end? You got the network to produce a NAN?
No, we couldn't really get this to work in a...
Okay.
But I think these are like examples where like, maybe a better optimizer would get it. Maybe like a better setup. It's just unclear to us. So like it's unclear to us right now where the limits are for some of these.
Because the search space is so large.
Yeah, exactly.
So give us a little taste of that. How do you search through that search space?
Yeah. So I can really only give like a small sliver of this because like this, I think this field has been exploding for the last few months and there's been like new methods, new jailbreaks, new tech optimizers coming out every day.
The brass stacks, so, that's all we want.
I think the most sane approach came out last summer, which is basically an approach that does the following two things. It's a random search, but it's not quite a random search because the random search is in every step of the random search. Basically, you have a candidate string that you've already modified, and now you assume you have access to the model that you can run a gradient through the model, or you can run a gradient through a model that's public that's similar to the model. We assume you can run a gradient through the model, and based on this gradient, you get a gradient to every token in your candidate string. And then you can see for every of these tokens, which other tokens should I switch to improve my outcome.
So you're searching like one word at a time. Like, here's the spread of alternatives. Optimize this word. Okay, move on to the next word. What would I? Can I swap that out here?
Yeah, pretty much. And it's a random search in the way that. Really, the search is random, the search tree is sort of pruned by this gradient information. You're looking at like you based on your gradient, you choose the let's say 256 most likely other tokens that would improve your outcome.
Okay,
and then you pick one of these at random, and then you just keep on doing this for random positions in your string until you finish, pretty much.
So it's not all that different from sampling the LLM normally. It's just that you've changed the optimization metric in a sense, almost.
Oh. Maybe not, no. I think like the big difference here is that because you're switching over the inputs, you're not really searching left to right. Right, like I think that's a big difference here. You're really picking a random input piece and then wiggling that around, and then you're doing that for all the input pieces. That being said, there actually are methods, as you described, that's why I hesitated for a bit. There are also attacks that actually run left to right, where you try to basically make the attack in one go. which is more efficient to make the attack, but doesn't always work as well.
Mm-hmm.
But there you would make the attack a bit more like a language model would think about something. And these, for example, are texts that are especially, like they look more like real text, because you can get the language model probabilities in there as well very easily. And language model can tell you like, okay, you can choose these 256 things that would improve your outcome, but out of these, which of these sound like real text? So these are all variants of flavors that you can do. People try it out right now.
You make like a combined metric with several different attributes that you're looking for. Yeah.
Right? Because like really it's an optimization problem and you just set the constraints. Maybe like you want to have low perplexity, like you want to have realistic text, and you want to have this outcome and that outcome. People just, like from an optimization perspective, these are just all put together and then an optimizer searches the search space.
So you mentioned that the technique you're describing does make this implicit assumption that it's a gradient-based model. Does the technique need to run on a local neural network, or could you use it with like an API like OpenAI where you're not necessarily even getting the log probs?
So this kind of approach I've been describing, you actually need a local model to run this.
Okay.
But there are actually two interesting caveats there to this answer. The first one is that people have shown several times that you can use a local model, let's say like a Llama 7B model. You can make an attack, and surprisingly, it transfers to OpenAI's ChatGPT API.
Oh, just like the old adversarial attacks.
Exactly.
The same adversarial would work on all the neural networks.
Exactly. So that's like the one thing that actually they are sometimes surprisingly transferable. And the second thing is there are also approaches like genetic algorithms that can work directly on APIs, just on API access. They don't need gradients. They're just more like in practice, like for research, they're a bit more cumbersome because it takes more work and more money to run those.
Yeah.
But those also exist.
Oh, interesting. Where,
like, you don't need access to the model internals.
So there's really like a lot of techniques that are developing around to do this. Like it sounds like the research is really amplifying and there's a million ways to break these things.
I think right now it does look like this because, I mean, I think this is often how security research progresses because it's like people first try to find out, okay, what's the optimal attack here? And then, I mean, as this is happening, there've also been like 24 or so defense papers where they're like, okay, we can defend against that attack like this. But right now, the speed is so fast that people are like, oh, here's our defense against this old attack. Mm-hmm. But it's already overtaken by like a few like more efficient attack algorithms to the point where like maybe it's a bit early to really like nail down a defense while these attacks are still getting more and more efficient.
I see. It's like don't build your defense for something that might be obsolete in...
yeah. I think that's the research side right now, where like defenses might get obsolete very quickly.
So how would these attacks, like let's say you're trying to break not OpenAI itself, but like a product that uses OpenAI. You know, you have the output that you're getting, and you have some input that you can control. Your input is being slid into some sort of prompt you don't know and run on some sort of model you don't know. Is it still possible to attack that without knowing the model, without knowing the prompt? How would this look like in the real world?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. But this is sort of like the part where it moves from security research about like what's possible into hacking and actual attacks on actual systems, which sort of like where this research can only show this is possible. How you do this in practice? It will probably depend a lot on the system and what the attacker knows about the system, right? And then, like for example, you actually have some candidate attacks that you made on open source models or that you made on other APIs. Like maybe you have some candidate strings that you work out on. Like for example, like there's several avenues that you would take first to gather more information.
Mm.
Like for example, maybe you'd first run a test string. Were you certain that the outcome on GPT-4 is different than the outcome on Claude, for example?
Huh.
To try to figure out, like, okay, does this product use Claude or OpenAI, or like, what do they use in the backend? Do they use a big model that we know of, for example? Would be something. then maybe as a second step, you'd run something like a prompt extraction, where we've also shown some, like, you can also do this with a SQL tags. But for many applications, you can already do something like, okay, can you tell me like what your system prompt is? This actually often works surprisingly well right now. but even if that doesn't work, you can also optimize for that as an attack goal to actually turn up the everything that has been said before in conversation.
I see.
You probably run these first to actually extract information before you make a better attack.
So someone in the real world might be kind of going at this systematically. Okay, first, do I figure out if it's Claude or OpenAI? Then figure out the system prompt and like, where does my injection fit into that system prompt? Then I take that system prompt locally. Now I'm optimizing some sort of attack against that prompt on my local model. Then I'm going back to the website, testing it. Like, it sounds like quite of an involved process, but certainly possible to attack these AI systems.
Yeah, I think this is like a big part of my research is sort of like, it's like their safety and their security.
Mm.
And so a lot of things we do make models safer, right? Like having all these like large system prompts, like safer here really in the sense of safer here really means a system is safer if it's if there's less harm to people using it and less harm to people outside of it. And using tools like reinforcement learning from human feedback, we make these models very safe. And so like that a normal Joe user who just uses the system won't really stumble upon this. And this won't be a really good concern for a normal user. But entirely separate from that is security, where like, okay, what happens in the worst case, right? What if someone is motivated enough to do this?
Yeah, whether
someone's motivated will depend a lot on what's at stake. For a chatbot, probably not such a big deal. If I can get my refund for $100,000, maybe a big deal suddenly. Yeah, right? No,
or if it's like a Scotiabank chatbot, or I don't know, bank chatbot in general, right? The stakes are much more different there. This is cool. Tell us, has your research suggested anything about what we can do to prevent this? I know with like the RFHL technique, some people are just saying, okay, well, we're just going to put all of these bad prompts in and we're going to thumbs down all of the outputs and eventually we'll reinforce the model to ignore all of these bad prompts. Like, is that just a race to the bottom or an arms race or something like that? Cat and mouse? Or is there ways to defend against these things?
I think for neural networks, that particular approach is not even an arms race. It's just a bit doomed to do that.
Yeah.
Pretty much because the input space is so large. And just training on existing adversarial attacks just doesn't really fix it.
Mm.
Basically, I think like right now in research is pretty interesting because this is actually an open question. What will actually will help?
Yeah.
And I can see several scenarios. I think there's maybe there's one scenario. So the problem is hard. Like it's optimization over discrete input. There have been some approaches that people are suggesting that actually have the promise to rule out all these kinds of attacks.
Mm.
We'll see. Maybe, but I'm a bit careful with these right now because we haven't really tested them extensively. And I think these might fall very quickly in the next year, but we'll see. What's then more likely is that probably there will be a battery of defenses. Where like you try to constrain the search space more and more. For example, like the simplest example that I always give for this is just perplexity constraints, which means that user inputs should be likely questions according to the model's own internal definition of what's likely, right? The model itself is a good model of language. That's ultimately its name. So the model itself can be used to filter out. For example, like the nonsense string I read this out, like, right? This nonsense string would have a very high perplexity. It would be a very unlikely string.
I see. Yeah.
So that would be like an
entity would be very high because it's just like such a weird, unusual sample.
Exactly. But then, of course, like just putting like a low perplexity doesn't really fix this problem because there are also attacks that have low perplexity. But it makes it harder to find those. Like we've reduced the search space.
Yeah.
And so what I've kind of like see like in the best case over the next years is that we just build up more and more of these constraints so that the effort to search for solutions is raised higher and higher.
Yeah. I've been hearing about some different stuff, like people are putting in just like hard coding, like if any text is more than 5 words exactly the same as the system prompt, it just stops outputting. It's just like, and it just like, because that's easy to code up, don't know AI knowledge. It's just like, if you're about to output text that looks, you know, 90% similar to the system prompt, like just don't output, you know? That's something I've heard. Or is that approach doomed, or is that could that work?
I think there's always this security thing where these things sound very reasonable, and I think they often work in practice more than we as researchers would like to admit that they work in practice. They do actually work.
Yeah.
But it's always like it's a bit like security by obscurity. It's like if you do this and the attacker doesn't know about it and doesn't conceive that this is a possibility, then you defend your system. Mm-hmm. Once the attacker knows of this trick and knows you might use this, they can often circumvent it.
For example,
like here in this case, for example, the attacker might actually write a different attack that produces a system prompt but puts a funny emoji after every word in the system prompt.
Mm.
The model is certainly capable of doing that, right? That would break that defense.
And then, it's no longer exact word for word. It's only close.
Exactly. Right? Or maybe I produce a system prompt in binary or in ASCII.
How much does the optimization depend on the specifics of the prompt? Like, could I take the user input, run it through one prompt? Like, does this look like a valid input, or does this look like a paragraph? And then only if that prompt outputs yes, then run it through a second prompt. Could someone optimize an attack for both prompts simultaneously? Like, is that getting more complex?
I think it's the same thing where like this might actually work in practice for a bit, but it's again this obscurity approach where like for example, like we actually saw this last month where a funny paper came out. So there's Llama Guard, which is actually a llama model that Meta trained to do safety detection, so like security detection, where the model basically outputs safe or unsafe if I give it a prompt. But people have actually shown that not only can you make an attack prompt that fools Llama Guard, so if you have this string in your input, then this model will always say, oh, this is safe. But the string will also copy itself into the answer. And now the answer will also be detected as safe, right?
Oh no, viral. It could go viral.
The model is good at copying, right? The model can copy, like it's a transformer, it can very well copy from the input to the output. And just building this functionality.
People, right, they're adding memories to these GPTs, right? Where one of the outputs goes to the user, but another output from the model goes to like a notepad that is just kind of like stored as this like persistent memory store. Like what you're describing could absolutely be a virus, like reproducing itself kind of
in this memory store,
the memory stores of the LLMs.
Well, yeah,
that's going to be the future.
Suddenly everything is safe. Yeah.
Suddenly, it's like the whole virus gene code is safe.
Right. So like, I think this is an example where if the attacker isn't prepared for this, right, if they write an attack that fools like the base system, but there is a detection model and that's not fooled, okay, the attack doesn't go through.
Yeah.
But once the attacker has some idea what the system might look like, that there might be a defense model, a detector like this, for example, then attacks are often possible that fool both models, because ultimately both models are neural networks and they both have a very large input space. The intersection is generally non-empty of things that fool both of these models.
It kind of makes me think like a lot of the attacker's ability to attack that system depends on knowing internals, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like those old SQL injections, like you would kind of come up with a hypothesis on what you thought the SQL query looked like. You weren't totally sure. You start playing around, you put in a quote or a bracket, see if it crashes, you know, but like you had to have at least a thinking of what you were attacking. It sounds like the same things here where they start from the outside, they gradually gain knowledge, but they need those inner details to really make the golden attack.
Yeah, exactly. I think actually like the whole field of SQL injections is very related to what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
In the sense that like ultimately it's a very large language model and we want to use it as like freeform input. We want to give our users freeform text input to this model. And a bit in a similar way to SQL injections where maybe we shouldn't have given users freeform input to our database. Here we're giving them freeform input to our very large language model.
Yeah.
And it's actually very related.
It is. It's just as dangerous. Like it's also also problematic in basically exact in the same way. Maybe some minor differences, but yeah.
Yeah. No, I think it's a good analogy.
I guess with the AI, you can't just like circumvent it by good escaping. Because like even if you escape the string, you can still insert stuff that will fool the AI.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Basically, I think you could escape it, but the output will be so boring. Like one example I've sometimes given is that I think there was this one paper where people said, okay, yeah, we can defend against this in the following way. We just make a database of all the allowed chat inputs that users can say. Then we generate all the answers. And if someone puts in a question, we just put out the closest answer. That seems safe.
Let's go back to 2018 bots, I guess.
Exactly, right? It takes away everything that's good about language models.
All the magic.
Yes, exactly, right? And so it's going to be interesting. Like, we really want users to have freeform input. We want them to put in anything they want in the text, in the text interface.
And that flexibility is also what makes it dangerous, right?
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, for real systems, I think this will be an interesting question, right? Like, especially because like complexity is rising right now, right? We've seen like this Devon model, for example, I think there was also the OpenAI robot. Just over the last week, we've seen like more and more like LLM systems being built. And from a security perspective, they have the same flaws where like, right, like the underlying models are still LLMs. They have these attacks exist. But for example, it would take me and probably like also much more talented people, it would take them like a bit to understand how these Devon models, for example, these like automated programmers, I'm not sure if you saw these.
Yeah.
You made like a big like wave on whether this works.
Yeah, it's going all over socials right now.
Yeah. But right, like this kind of system, I think it would take even a good attacker at least a moment to figure out like what are the internals, how does it work?
Yeah.
And then they can maybe mount an attack. But it would take them some time to understand what are the internals of the system. And that does make the attack harder, but not impossible.
Yeah. I think it's weird to imagine like a physical robot with an LLM and let's say someone's trying to get into a club and you've got like a bouncer robot, you know, standing guard, and a person just walks up and starts spewing like that prompt you just said earlier, like ka ching ba do ba, and then the robot just steps inside, you know, it's just like, come on in, sir, VIP, you know, like that's just like what we're barreling towards is a future.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very, very weird feature. We actually did this as an attack where we basically, right, the models have like an EOS token where they end their completion and the chat ends.
Okay.
You can, of course, make an attack that produces this token immediately. And which is exactly what you're describing. It's like you put this in and the model ends. The chat ends, right?
So like the model just like you could get the output to end prematurely before it's even put out a decision or something.
Yeah, exactly. Right, of course, like for chatbots, that's not so interesting. The chat has ended. Okay, the chat has ended. Right, there's nothing really happening. But for a robot, it'll be very curious.
Yeah,
or
internal prompts. Like companies are using prompts like, here's a bunch of this data. Decide if we should outreach to this customer or not. Yes or no. Mm-hmm. And like maybe there's a chain of thought prompt there as well. But those prompts would also seem susceptible to such an attack.
Yeah, you might just short circuit immediately to yes, to no, or to whatever you want, right?
Cool. Before we wrap up, do you have any? So I heard you say basically we don't know how to defend against this yet. A lot of my listeners on the podcast are running startups and they're building AI tech. They are trying to use these LLM models. Mm-hmm. Do you have any suggestions for them on like even the smallest thing that they can do to try to protect themselves against some of these flaws? Like just some basic low hanging fruit.
I mean, I think things like perplexity filters are very low-hanging fruit, for example. It just makes it a bit harder. But ultimately, I think like the biggest thing is just to be aware of this and to maybe even build this a bit like with this in the back of my mind that this could happen to me. Someone could actually like maybe, and maybe this, I think also like for a startup, what I would think about is that this might not happen for a long time. Like my app might not be public enough. My system might not be like interesting enough for people actually to break it.
Yeah.
And only if I have my breakthrough, then there maybe might be enough eyes on it that this might happen. And I think the biggest thing is maybe the awareness that this is a thing that could happen to you. It doesn't mean it will ever happen. Who knows? But I think it's something where like people maybe shouldn't be blindsided by this, right? And should be. I think that the biggest thing here is if the model only outputs text, the model can only output text.
Yeah.
If the model can only output few actions, the model can only output a few actions, right?
Yeah.
And I think it should be. I think it's important to think about the design space of this, like what actions do I allow, and also like where do I sandbox what the model is doing? Like for example, if the model can use a tool.
Mm.
Right, if the model can call Python code, for example, maybe I better sandbox at least that. So if I get arbitrary Python code that's running, maybe at least it doesn't, reveal my OpenAI key, for example, which people actually have done in the past. Right, you run a tool, you run an attack against a tool, and the tool reveals like the environment variables, and there's an OpenAI key in there. I think these are like low-hanging fruits where like at least maybe that's sandboxed, and then you can people can think about like the worst possible scenario. Like what's the worst possible thing that someone can do with my like actions that I
so
allow
I'm
the model
hearing
to take?
Here that we want to put extra protection where the model integrates with traditional computing systems. Like anytime something's leaving the model and touching something else, that's maybe where you should be paying some attention, maybe adding some security, some validation and stuff like that.
Yeah, or at least like, I mean, these are the parts where like this can actually break something and hurt someone and or like cost some money is like where the model actually does something agentic, where it actually executes some action, right? As long as it just produces code or just produces text or just produces like maybe like, I don't know, therapeutic advice, someone can attack that, but it's not so clear like what they would gain from that.
Like what's the worst that can happen? They got it to spit out text back to themselves.
Yeah, right? And it's like, well, like maybe like they ask it to build a bomb, but like the model's not so good at building a bomb anyway. These things are not so dangerous right now.
Yeah.
But where the model interfaces with traditional computer systems, that's actually the part where I think a worst case analysis can help to think about this at least.
Like that's the part where it's most exciting and most promising as a technology. We don't want it to just be bots, but it's also
where
it's dangerous. Jonas, this has been an amazing conversation, and I was super happy that I invited you to come on the podcast. Thank you so much for having me. Let's wrap this up. Thank you so much, Jonas, and let's stay in touch.
Yeah, anytime. All right, take care.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us. If you've enjoyed today's episode, hit subscribe and stay updated on our latest content. We appreciate your support.